Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Ben Mendelsohn on becoming an overnight success story in his 40s, playing bad guys in Star Wars and a Marvel movie, and playing against type in Darkest Hour. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to the show. Welcome to our special Thanksgiving edition of Happy, Sad, Confused.
Thanksgiving Fantabulous.
Yes, we didn't spend any time trying to decide what to call it, so yeah. Sammy just came up with a Fantabulous.
That's it.
Sammy, a welcome return back to the intro.
I'm so happy to be back. I missed Hutch.
You did miss the Hutch. You missed the Hutcherson. He'll be back. He's
got to be back. I was really upset about that.
He was a lot of fun.
Of course he was.
Calm down.
Of course he was.
This is so we're taping this mere hours before the Thanksgiving break.
Before Thanksgiving itself.
Yes.
We met up.
Oh my God, we need to cook the turkey. So a lot to be thankful for this year, Sammy, including the end of your 20s.
This is crazy. This is it.
Guys.
This is the last time you'll hear me as a 29-year-old. I'm going to sound so much more mature on the next one.
Have you been dreading? Is this a big one? How are you reconciling this? Calm down. Jesus.
I know it's been a long time since you turned 30, so it's hard for you to remember.
This is the 11th anniversary for me turning 30.
But it's a weird one, you know?
Yeah. It's time to grow up, Sammy.
Yeah.
Time to leave those childish games behind.
I'm going to start wearing pantsuits.
Right.
I'm going to go work at a bank.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think it works that way.
This is it. That is.
What about Thanksgiving traditions in the Heller household? Is there a movie, a dish, what time do you guys eat? Set the scene.
Big.
Because I'm coming over, whether you know it or not.
Big holiday for the Hellers. Okay. Linda Heller goes all out. Because, well, it's, you got my birthday.
Right.
Parents' anniversary is on my birthday.
Oh, wow.
Which is annoying of them.
That is annoying.
And then, yeah, I know.
It's probably annoying for them, too, frankly.
Well, it's...
Nobody wins in this scenario.
But if you're married, you get a birthday and an anniversary, so it doesn't... Right. I don't feel bad about it.
Right. Okay.
Like, they both have birthdays, too.
Okay, that's fair.
And Mother's Day and Father's Day.
Okay, you have a lot of resentment you need to get out of your system.
But we do, see, before my brothers had kids, we'd do like a solid 6:30, 7 o'clocker.
Right.
But now there are a bunch of kids, so it's like a 4:30, 5 o'clock.
I think we're the anomalies. I don't know if this is like an East Coast thing or something, because we also tended to have later like meals in the evening, but I feel like...
People do it at like 2 o'clock.
I know, my in-laws do it very early, and it's like, and I think that's the norm, actually. I think we're the odd ones.
But then don't you fall asleep?
Well, I think the idea, again, we're two ignorant people.
Right.
I think the idea is you eat early and then you can like nibble and nosh the rest of the night. It's like an all-day eating affair, which I'll eat all day. I'm cool with that part of it. But I'm just conditioned for – I don't eat dinner before 6 o'clock.
During nap time.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, eat whenever you like, guys. It's fine.
I like to watch some Harry Potter marathons.
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
I like my family watch football downstairs, and I'll go upstairs and
– Silently,
and,
quietly
yeah,
in
yeah,
your
and
room.
Watch the Hunger Games by myself. Yeah, pretty much.
Well, our guest this week, apropos of nothing you've just said, is Ben Mendelsohn. He's not appeared in a Harry Potter
movie.
Were
you freaking out?
I love Ben.
Were Mendelsohn. You like so giddy that morning?
Probably, I was very excited because
spent extra time ironing your button-down shirt.
Ben Mendelsohn is just like one of my favorite. I guess he's a character actor. You would call him that. He's a guy that in the last 6 or 7 years has his career's kind of like revved up into like a totally new level thanks to his breakout film, which was Animal Kingdom, this Australian film Animal Kingdom, which if you have not seen it, Sammy, I recommend check it out.
Thank
it's
you.
It's got Joel Edgerton in it.
Oh.
Jackie Weaver got Oscar nominated
well,
for
I'm
it.
I'm familiar.
Yep. So a lot of great people in it, and it's a really good movie. And that kind of broke him through outside of the Australian market. And since then, you know, he obviously popped up as the bad guy in Rogue One. He was starred with Ryan Reynolds in a great film called Mississippi Grind, Bloodline.
I was going to say, for me, he's Bloodline.
Yeah, and I think he won an Emmy for that. He was excellent in that. And he's just working with the best.
I was very attracted to him in Bloodline.
Oh, thank you for that confessional moment. Okay.
So, yeah. So everyone knows I find him attractive.
And he's just firing on all cylinders. He's working with such great actors, including the great Gary Oldman in his new film. You have to call him the great Gary Oldman, I feel like, right?
I think that's his first name.
Yeah. The film is Darkest Hour. Gary Oldman stars as Winston Churchill. And it is an astonishing piece of acting and transformational acting because Gary, you know, has all the prosthetics and he is just unrecognizable. And he is the presumptive favorite to win every award this season. I would be shocked if he does not win Best Best Actor, and he's surrounded by Ben Mendelsohn, who plays King George. Who
I love that.
I know, who of course was, you know, Colin Firth, of yes. course, won for playing that role in The King's Speech. And this is a different story. This is the story of Churchill rising to power and kind of making the pivotal decisions that, you know, seemingly in the end changed the course of history and saved his country.
Saved Western civilization.
I mean, let's not overstate it, but kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we'd be here without him. Let's say that.
Thanks, Winston. Mm-hmm. This is a very good movie. It's directed by Joe Wright, who did Atonement. It's a solid piece of work all around, and it's going to be a big one this award season. So we talk a lot about that, but we talk about his crazy, amazing ride the last 7 years and some of his influences growing up. And he's a character in the best possible way. I really vibed with him really well. I think he's my new best friend for life. I don't want to overstate things.
But all your other best friends are going to be so upset.
Exactly. Luckily, there was an opening for this position.
Yeah. Everyone's going to freak out.
Yeah, Michael Shannon might be really angry.
Michael Shannon and Mark Wahlberg are furious.
Seriously. Yeah. So there's a lot in this conversation to enjoy, including his talking about, you know, being the bad guy in Star Wars and potentially playing the bad guy in the next big Marvel movie, Captain Marvel, the movie starring
Brie Larson.
Yeah, exactly. So let's toss this to that conversation right now.
Wait, before you do
what
that,
what do you got?
I want to just remind everyone to rate, review, and subscribe.
Very good. Always on message. Very good job, Sammy.
And you can get a shout out, guys.
This is true. This is true. Go on iTunes, review, rate, and subscribe. And that review part is important because you can be as super famous as Sammy has become thanks to this podcast.
Yep.
We will read your review on the intro, and riches will surely follow.
And I'll probably try to be your friend.
Well, so
too. Yeah.
I don't know if you're encouraging it now.
Well, I'll ignore you.
Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Happy 30th, Sammy.
Oh, thank you.
And everybody out there, please enjoy this conversation with Ben Mendelsohn. It's always a great pleasure to see one of my favorite actors working today, Mr. Ben Mendelsohn. It's good to see you, man.
Thank you. It's good to see you, man.
We last spoke in the craziness of Comic-Con, I think. Things are a little calmer now, just the two of us in my sad little weird office.
These offices are weird. I'll give you that.
Yeah, it's on TV, so it's weird.
Yeah, they're not sad. I'm looking around. There is a Big Trouble in Little China poster. It's signed. There's a Back to the Future poster. It's signed. There's a Color of Money poster. It's signed. And there is the Hunger Games Killing Season. And it's signed. And there's a beautiful, big, big photo of you and Michael Shannon signed.
We need to get one of you and me together up here.
That would be pretty cool. Like,
I would
this is a great looking
display that. There's room on the wall for you
this
and me.
This is a really great, and you've got Frank.
Oh, I love Frank.
Yeah.
Great movie, right?
Yeah, and great writer. The wonderful, and why am I doing this?
I'm blanking myself too.
And I know the human, and it is, oh dear. We're doing this late in the afternoon, and at that time my brain always fries. Men Who Stare at Goats.
Right.
End, The Psychopath Test.
I don't know.
John Ronson. Thank you, John Ronson. Sorry, John Ronson.
The love is there. Don't worry. The love and appreciation is there.
Yes.
You've always been a movie man, movie buff, movie geek, or
well,
what?
I don't know. You know, like, I'm sort of like, I guess half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a half-caste geek.
Which, the top half or the bottom half?
I don't know if it's that clearly delineated. But I've always, I mean, you know, they have a big impact on you. You know what I mean? Like, you see them. I think there's that classical period from 8 to about 15. And the stuff you
evidenced
see.
Evidenced by my walls here.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
Yep.
But you think about it. You go back. You think about that period. That is such a intense. You know, you're an intense audience at that stage, and the stuff that imprints and hits you then really, really stays with you. So mine were things like Midnight Cowboy, Thunderbolt and Lightfoot.
Sure.
Loved Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. Loved that so much. And Taxi Driver when I was about 15. Gotcha. And, you know, they were the big ones. I mean, I had Star Wars at the start of that.
Yep.
Alien.
Okay. So mid to late 70s is kind of like your jam in terms of...
Well, you know, I'm 69, so you know, by the time that stuff rolls around, yeah.
Yeah, you're 8 years old when Star Wars comes out. So
yeah, and the other ones I've seen on, you know, I see on TV. No, I'm in the cinema for Star Wars.
Right.
And I remember that one big time.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, like, we've talked a couple times in recent years, and there's been a lot of opportunity to talk because you've been working, it seems, nonstop. You've had a lot of great opportunities. And yet I feel like I'm not – I pride myself on being a film geek, and I know my shit generally. I don't know a good portion of your career. I know, almost everything you've done in the last 7 years.
Yeah,
I've probably seen everything since Animal Kingdom.
Yeah.
And yet I feel like there's a lot – I could spend a week going back and just discovering, like, what your life was – the first 20 plus years of your career.
Yeah.
That's an interesting place for an actor to be where you kind of like, you almost can start from scratch at 40.
Yeah.
And there's no baggage for an audience.
No, look, it's very unusual. It's the kind of, you know, it's the wonderful consolation to the 20 years I spent coming here.
Right.
With nothing. But, you know, it's very unusual for someone to not have, you know, some type of relationship, you know, in a viewing acting sense by that stage. So that's kind of, I think that's worked out, you know, I'm sure that's a factor in all of this.
Had you written off this kind of career?
Yeah.
Before,
well before Animal Kingdom, well before it.
Because you'd appeared here and there in a couple of studio films.
Yeah, yeah.
But for whatever reason, and many in your peer group.
Yeah.
Like, who was your peer group?
Okay, so you're thinking Nicole, you're thinking Naomi, you're thinking Russell, you're thinking Hugh is actually after my peer group.
Right.
Hugh comes a few years later.
Guy Pierce in there?
Guy's very much. And Guy, in a lot of ways, is the most remarkable because Guy and Simon Baker, both mm-hmm. of them escaped, you know, what appear to be almost, you know, career death sentences of being massive heartthrobs
back
home, because of the stuff they were doing.
Yeah.
And that can tend to have, you know, a pretty intense...
That's a sticky thing for
period, and then, yeah. you know, and then be over.
Yeah. So, like, when something like LA Confidential happens and you see, like, Russell and Guy in that, are you like, oh, that's amazing? Or, like, why is that not me?
You know, I mean, neither. Okay. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm neither that's amazing nor that should be me. that was pretty good for them.
Yeah.
And you know what? They were both fantastic in that film. But they got that film because two guys that were supposed to do it, two movie stars,
right.
dropped out. You know, weren't. So that was that last minute call. That's the same thing that happened to me in Trespass. There was to be another actor there.
Oh, really?
In fact, that actor was going to be Nick Cage and there was someone else playing the other role. Then Nick had dropped out and, you know, it had switched around. He played the other part, la, la, la. And that just kind of came, you know, because of that. So that seems to be the way that, you know, those kind of breaks can occur.
That's supposedly, correct me if I'm wrong, I read different kind of versions of it, that Romper Stomper. Was that something that you were supposed to do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd shaved the head. I'd started the work on it and stuff like this. We couldn't get that one together.
I'm seeing a smile.
Yeah, yeah.
A smile now.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, I mean, you know, look, I mean, you know, you watch these things happen and you go, I mean, there'd been a couple of those.
Yeah.
There'd been a couple of those. Suffice to say that, you know, my conclusion by the time, you know, I guess around, you know, 2005 or 6 or whatever had come around, I was just like, well, it's kind of done.
Right.
You know? Like, you had a great, you know, kind of, you had a great sort of career going in your late teens, 20s. Sure. And then, you know, you're a 30, you know, 5-year-old or whatever, and you're like, well, are you really going to sit and wait around for,
Right.
And I knew, you know, I could probably, you know,
you were making
work.
A living still. You're not
No,
like...
I wasn't, mate.
Oh, really?
No. I didn't work for about 3 years there. So, no, I didn't think of it ending because I was still making a living. It wasn't some sort of highbrow kind of thing like that.
Very practical, looking at the bank account.
Well, you know, like, what are you going to do? You're going to sit around the rest of your life sort of waiting for, you know.
Yeah.
And that's actually the typical kind of trajectory of a career anyway.
Right.
That there's an intense kind of period or what, you know, and then, you know, it moves on. I mean, the spotlight moves on. That's the nature of it.
How far down the road of thinking about what else you're going to do with your life did you get in terms of, like, how you're acting?
Well, I had a time limit thing on it, so I kind of thought, okay, I'll give it another 2 years, yeah. You know, because I didn't really know what else to do. I had ideas, you know, pipe dreams, really, just sort of notions, nothing really practicable or anything like that. Right. And I'd done other jobs, you know. I mean, there were other things I'd done, but they were just kind of manual labor, kind of, you know, pickup jobs, whatever you. So, you know, I thought about that, and then I thought about leaving, you know, the industry altogether, and I thought about maybe doing something different. Anyway, whatever. It didn't happen that way. The time limit ran out, and there still was nothing really going on. And then I just didn't know what to do. And I just sort of, you know, I had a fantastic girlfriend at the time who was, you know, I would take the dog out for walks during. It was actually not a bad time.
Right,
you know what I mean? Like, the funny thing about these things is your career might be going like shit, but your personal life's kind of great.
Right.
And
I was happy. I just wasn't.
Yeah. And I was. Yeah. I was pretty happy.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bad time. I just knew I had to sort of do the next sort of 50 years of whatever.
This week is great. It's just the next 30 or 40 years that I'm a little worried about.
Well, you know, it's. Yeah. So.
So, and this, I mean, look, we've talked about this before, but it is true, and I know you'll always say this, Animal Kingdom was the thing that changed your career.
Yeah,
and
without
it,
doubt.
And it changed it, I mean, I watched it again this past week just to refresh, and it's a great film just to check out if you haven't seen it. It didn't only change your career, it changed a bunch of your peers.
Just about everyone that participated in that, went on. I mean, David Michaud gave a lot of people their careers.
Yeah.
And you know, we quite correctly credit him with that. I didn't think David was going to do that. I didn't think that was going to happen.
So what was the turning point when you saw the industry, or like, where did it screen, or how quickly did the tide turn on that in terms of, like, oh, this is...
It was kind of apparent. I mean, Sundance was the big one. You know, Sundance, going to Sundance, hearing that audience after it had screened, you know, hearing them like, wow, that's a movie.
Yeah.
But nothing came of it, right? Like, it was just like the tumbleweeds kept blowing down the, you know, la, right. La, la. Nothing came of it for, like, I don't know, a year or something like that.
Really.
Like, it was quite a... these time frames get a little,
sure.
You know. But, yeah, nothing came of it for quite a while.
So
and then,
was,
bam.
What was the bam?
It was Trespass. That was it. It was a call out of the blue.
Really?
Completely out of the blue. That was my first, that was my first, you know, American job.
And did you have a persona, like, back home? Like, what was the...
I had a couple of them. I mean, they'd gone over iterations. To start with, it was sort of like, sweet boy trying to... you know, boy loses girl, boy gets, you know, that one of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was kind of, you know, it morphed into what they used to call a lad, you know, or an ocker or a larrikin. Larrikin is the correct term. And a larrikin is kind of like, you know, a working class, kind of everyday, kind of cheeky, you know.
Okay.
F.U. kind of
wise ass
Australian
kind of, sure.
Guy. Wise ass.
Yeah.
So then there was that kind of phase. And then, you know, obviously the most recent sort of thing, you know, can be characterised by sort of malevolence.
Right. Which, thankfully, this latest project, which we're going to get to, flies in the face of, I would say.
Yeah, it does fly in the face of. It was a huge, huge surprise.
Well, let's jump to this one, then we'll backtrack. Because I got a chance to see it again last night. The film is Darkest Hour. I've seen this twice. It's a beautiful piece of work. I mean, from the performances, which, you know, you and Kristin Scott Thomas are getting attention, and of course Gary Oldman is getting a ton of very justified praise for this, and it shouldn't be ignored. I mean, just from a craftsmanship, Joe Wright is an impeccable director, and it's a rousing piece of material.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It really works with it. It's fun to see with an audience. Like, it's inspiring. It's hopeful, even though, you know, belies the title. It's actually like a very I don't know. It's a powerful piece of cinema. I feel like that we kind of need. I mean, not to put it on too big a pedestal, but I think it's coming at a good time.
It does seem like the stars are aligned up for it. I mean, it was conceived many, many years back, but it really seems to be ringing a bell at the time. Yeah, right now.
Let's geek out a little bit on Gary Oldman.
Yeah,
because I'm fine doing that anyway. Even before Darkest Hour, he was basically top three or five.
Oh no, like easily, you know, easily.
What was your Gary Oldman jam? Did you have a favorite growing up that you kind of
a favorite?
Yeah.
Well, there's so many of them. I mean, Prick Up Your Ears. Dracula is one that I kept returning and returning to. Dracula, I consider, has the best love scene that's ever been put on film. I think
where he's seducing her, where he
Good God, no! I mean, how ridiculous! like you know, like that's all right, but it's kind of like whatever compared to no. It's on the bed. It's when he's, you know, take me away from all this death, and it's what goes on. It's the transition in his face from the blissful wanting oneness to the horrible realization of what
he's
this love is going to do.
His love.
And I think that's a really, I mean, the reason it's such a great, great love scene is it's sort of, you know, it's what happens for a lot of people. This not the bliss of one, but what am I going to do to them? What are they going to do to me? All of this. It's an incredibly beautiful and it's just, it's amazing. It's my favorite love scene ever.
Really?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Oh, no, I mean, you're speaking I'm obsessed with that film. That's an amazing piece of work.
Yeah, I do think, there are films which have a lot more to sort of, they drift a lot more in love and stuff like that.
Sure.
And they have beautiful performances where you can see, like, you know, the effect of love and stuff in the bloom of it. Like, I'm thinking of Blue is the Warmest Colour.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, that performance is extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, the blushing, that's an extraordinary performance too. You're not going to see another one of those. But I mean, and I don't mean the humpy pumpy bits.
No,
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the exchanges are extraordinary. Other ones of Gary's? Okay, so I've said Prick Up Your Ears, I've said that, and then we've got, you know, I mean, they go on and on and on. Yeah. I mean, Sid and Nancy, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, if we want to go recent.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth Element.
Of course.
Leon, aka The Professional.
Oh yeah, I don't think he likes The Fifth Element. I've brought up The Fifth Element.
You know what?
Before.
He can afford not. Look, the thing is, they're not made for him.
No, I know.
None of them are made for him. So it doesn't matter what he thinks about it, because they're for us.
It's true.
It's not when you make a film. Who gives a rat's ass whether the participants like it or not?
Right.
I don't. I could give a.
I just want him to get the same enjoyment I get out of it.
Yeah, I know. Well, unlucky. Unlucky. It's not made for him.
So tell me this. Okay, so you're acting opposite someone like this, and I think it's only three or four scenes with him, and it's an interesting kind of evolution of this relationship between...
I think you're right.
Right?
And, yeah, I think there is only... Yeah, I think you're right.
So you cover a lot of ground in...
Yeah, we do,
in
don't
an evolution
we?
Of a relationship over the course of three very key scenes
throughout
the film.
Yeah, we do. You know what? I hadn't even thought of that.
It just occurred to me last night seeing it for the second time, because I was also zeroing in sort of what the opportunities that you get to do in the film, and it really it's starting like kind of where you go by that last scene without ruining sort of, I mean, it's history, but like without ruining sort of like the rapprochement or whatever.
No, absolutely, and I think that's appropriate.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's appropriate, but it is a George quite rightly thinks that Winston Churchill is a dodgy appointment.
Right.
He's very dodgy. You know, he's messed up a lot of stuff. He's made really bad calls. On a personal level, he also backed George's brother to, you know, go on, do follow your, you know, like all that.
Right.
I mean, come off. whereas Halifax, Viscount Halifax, has a really good record. Really good record.
Yeah.
And he was, in a lot of ways, a much more consistent operator. Mm. He was more reliable. He was, inverted commas, the better choice at that moment. Except he wasn't. Except
not.
He really, really wasn't. And I think the evolution of that, and we're operating here within a really small time frame. We're talking about a month.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the stuff that goes to, boy, that month. And like moments like the Cuban Missile Crisis and like these intense moments where history really does hang in the balance, people do things which change the fate of the whole world.
Yeah, without overstating it, it literally is.
And what they do literally does. I mean, there's this sort of American obsession, you know, of I want to make the world a better place.
Right.
You know, you hear kids from 3 to 93 say it.
Right.
Well, Winston did that.
It's also a film that, like, really celebrates words and the power of words, and that words can literally change the course of a nation, the course of humanity. And without getting hokey about it, that's kind of, I would guess, part of the appeal of acting too. I mean, your art form changes people's lives, or certainly affects people, and it's very, a lot of it is about the words in the end.
Absolutely. And I think that doesn't get the props that it deserves.
Right.
I mean, it really is all about the language. There's an enormous amount that goes on in screen that
but you need that baseline, usually, at least.
Yeah, you do. I mean, it is, you know, a script ultimately is the words that you're going to be saying.
Yeah.
A film is not necessarily, but certainly a script is.
Do you relish, like, a nice meaty monologue? Like, there are some great speeches in this. Is that something that you can enjoy making a meal out of, or is that...
Well, the thing with them is that you can slice and dice them in different ways. Mm. And I think that's actually the fun to be had with them. And that's the enjoyment of, you know, Friends, Romans, Countrymen, is you can cut it.
Right.
Like we're all in on this big joke.
Right.
Or you can cut it like this is going to be completely, you know, convincing because that's the way we do it.
Right.
You can do them all sorts of different ways, and that is the pleasure of it. But, there's an idea that I picked up from an old documentary that actually, for the English-speaking people, it is the language itself that is our great art form. You know, it's not the visual arts, it's not the music, it's not the this, it's not the sculpture. For the English-speaking peoples of the world, the language ended up being the art form.
Hmm.
And I think there's certainly, that's a classical idea, and I think that's morphed and expanded out because I think, you know, films and rock and roll and stuff like jazz and et cetera, there are many new great 20th and now 21st century art
forms. But those are all extensions of what you're talking about anyway.
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, I put a lot of play on that. Yeah. I think that is true. I think the malleability of the English language, the ability to grab it all and draw it into its orbit,
So when you're on a set like this, or any set, I'm curious, like, is there conversation? Do you know exactly what you're doing in that scene when you set foot on that set?
Nah.
So are you finding it in the course of, like, running through it a couple times?
Yeah, I think so. I think, and I don't think you ever complete finding it, personally.
It's not like,
because I don't know that, I'm not sure that for me anyway, that's the way it is. It's more about the variations you can play on something.
Right.
That's more, you know, it's a more Theolonious kind of, you know,
well,
vibe.
And especially in film as opposed to theater, I would think, where film you're giving them options. You want, don't
yeah,
you want to
no,
give
no,
them
no,
some
that's
options?
Absolutely true, because that's all actually constructed. In fact, I think of it this way. The only thing you're ever doing is offering up a proposition. You know what I mean? It's not like this is it or this isn't it or whatever. It's a proposition, because later on the director, the editor take it, they look at it, they go, oh, these kind of fit together well and they do this, dot, right. dot, dot. So I don't get too hung up on that stuff. And I do think the difference between the map and the battleground
yeah.
is crucial. You know, you can go in having read this, you know, being all over it top to bottom and knowing, and then you can get there and be across from someone else that has a completely different idea and spend your time going, oh, why aren't they just getting this or whatnot? Or you right. can get in there and...
Because you have to be in the scene with the, yeah. that same scene.
Yeah, or you have a director that's different yeah. or, you know, like this is supposed to be in a room and you're next to a waterfall and you end up, you know, sort of...
Yeah, it's not what you imagined in your yeah, hotel room the night before. Like, wait, yeah. the desk is supposed
Where's
to be over here.
Where's all this certainty
like, yeah.
gone? So, yeah, I think it does pay to approach it like, you know, with a certain amount of malleability.
Do you have the... I mean, part of the beauty of Gary's career is, like, you know, he's a chameleon like no other. And obviously this film is I mean... Also, props to the makeup people, et cetera. It's remarkable what they've done to transform him. Do you have that same kind of love? Like, do you like transforming yourself to a degree? Have you put yourself...
Well,
you,
I mean, it's just, you know, it's playing different characters, isn't it? And, you know, Gary's work here to do Winston is... it's pretty fantastic, you know? It's pretty, pretty, pretty...
Is he doing it with Larry David? Pretty, pretty. Making a play for Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah, yeah.
I can see you on that.
You know.
anyway.
Anyway, whatevs on... it's extraordinary work. He spent a lot of time.
Yeah.
A lot of time doing what he delightfully calls kitchen acting, which is chucking the script down on the bench and then having a walk around and talk, you know, saying the lines, coming back to it and stuff like that. Look, I like generally speaking being on a set and doing scenes. I like trying to figure them out.
Yeah. I watched again the other one I wanted to go back to this week just because I love it, and it's I think also an important film in your career that not enough people saw is Mississippi Grind, which is a great piece of work from both you and Ryan Reynolds. Fleck and Bowden are the directors.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Boy, you're good. You've got a brain on you, man.
Well, I legitimately love this stuff.
Yeah.
So my question, I mean, you're the lead in that. Ryan Reynolds is not the lead in that.
No, that's my first time I ever got, and only, might I add, first and only time I've ever been a lead in an American film. I was very proud of it.
Did you do like this?
Oh, no, hold on. Yes, no, well, that's not out yet. So
okay, I'm looking forward to that one too. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, no, that is, and I sin by omission there. That is, yeah. That I think that's a beautiful piece. I'm incredibly proud of being the lead in her film. That's awesome.
So I guess my question about that, I don't know, there were a couple of things that struck me in that. I mean, it's like Mississippi Grind, I feel like, is a film about like the highs and lows of like addiction that can come in any form. Like, you know, even just like seeing where Jerry goes in terms of like the excitement he gets, the rush he gets, and then just the pathetic, sad, you know, cycle of a gambler. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, no. Jerry, I love Jerry. I do love Jerry. But, great end on that film. I love the end of that film. Love the end of that film. One of my favorite ever. See, go on.
No, I guess my question is also about the fact, so you mentioned you also got to play the lead in this other upcoming one. And there's like kind of this, like, this other narrative about you right now, which is like... bad guy, you know, he's like doing, and you are, you've done a bunch of
bad
guys,
no doubt.
And you do them really well.
Thank you kindly.
Is there, how conscious of that kind of narrative are you? And is there,
well, I'd be deaf, dumb, and blind if I wasn't conscious of it.
Sure.
I don't care that much.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it that, I mean, first of all, it's a pretty decent compliment to be asked to play the bad guy.
Yeah, so and to be fair, the kinds of films that you're being asked to play bad guys in are like the ones you want to be in. If it's Star Wars or potentially a Marvel film, etc.
Yeah,
this is good.
I'm more interested in the films themselves kind of working and whatnot in them. And, look, I think the reason people have started to sort of flip about this one in terms of, you know, my bit in it is because it's a context that they're not, you know, it's not a box that they, you know, they equate.
So yes. You can present yourself so well. You get to dress nicely. You don't have a evil cape in this one.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, I know this runs the risk of being glib, but, yeah, it is acting. you know, it is the job I do.
Well, I kind of expect sometimes Orson Krennic to walk in with a flourish.
There you go.
but on the Star Wars tip, I know that was like a special one. I mean, it's always a special opportunity to participate in.
How can it not be? It's Star Wars. I mean, it's Star Wars.
I was kind of being flip about the costume, but it was a great look that character had. Is that one of your, you know, more notable looks as a character in that?
Of course. I mean, that. Look, I mean, I've had the good fortune to work with some really, really good costume designers, some really good directors, some really good actors, et cetera. Right. But the secret of Star Wars that they were able to employ makes that costume really extra special. And there is a secret to Star Wars. There is.
And what are you talking about? What do you mean by that?
There's a secret to the costumes in Star Wars.
Are you talking about a literal, like, a seam they put in, or are you talking
I'm not going to elucidate, but there's a basis on which they operate.
Okay.
Which is why they're such genius costumes.
Without trying to pry that out of you, you also are probably one of the only actor I can think of in the last 25 years to share a bunch of scenes with Darth Vader, whoever that is in that costume. Mm-hmm. Because it's interesting. A bunch of your scenes are with like a guy in a Darth Vader costume who's not just a guy.
It's going to be Gary Oldman or Darth Vader.
or the ghost of Peter Cushing. I mean,
right. Or Kyle Chandler. I'm only going for the absolute cream in whatever medium it is, whatever film type, that's it.
Is that...
You can keep the curds and whey. I'll take the cream.
Okay, let's go to another icon then. Spielberg.
Yeah.
I mean...
Wow.
I'm seeing his new in the Post this weekend.
I can't wait.
They're starting to screen it.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Just give me a sense of sort of... I mean, we haven't seen much of this film. I don't need the details of the film, but just in terms of the magic that is Spielberg.
From my experience about working with Steven Spielberg is that guy is an audience like you. You're never going to get an audience like Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
You are never going to have an audience like that. That is an audience that, you know, just is makes you so happy to work for. And he's got... I mean, his dexterity. The thing you don't expect about him is how much he finds it. Like, you know, he's got his battle map, but then he's got his battleground. Yeah. And on the battleground, like, boom. He is the Napoleon of filmmaking. That guy can be on a set and just change it all up completely.
Right.
He's got a crew that are insane. Like, they are, in terms of what they can do, the speed at which they can do it, I've never experienced anything like it. Now Ridley Scott's got an amazing crew, like, amazing crew. These guys have, and in fact, when you think about it, the two of them have been able to operate in contemporary Hollywood studio system for longer with more success than anyone else that comes to my mind, and that might be my ignorance.
No, that's...
It's hard for me to think of anyone else that belongs in that Parthenon. And I've worked with both of those guys. Both of their crews are extraordinary. But Steven, if I may call him that...
Thank you.
Cool. ..is... just a delight to work for. And the other thing is that they're just really they're great guys. They right. just
he's,
really.
He's still excited to be there.
He loves it.
Yeah.
He loves it.
He was put on this earth to do that.
He loves it.
Yeah.
And his knowledge is post-encyclopedic. I mean, right. it's beyond encyclopedic. He still has, you know, a passionate engagement with a classical period of Hollywood filmmaking
right.
that is actually the strongest life force of the whole business. I mean, you know, we have divergence and we change styles and this and that, but actually if you go back to certain filmmakers at certain times, your Billy Wilders, sure. your Howard Hawks, yeah. your Hitchcocks, you will find there a clarity of storytelling and an effectiveness that, you can do a lot worse than sort of emulate that sort of style. I mean, it's a blueprint.
It's weird to, I just saw, I don't know if you saw that new documentary about him.
Which one?
There's like
the Hitchcock Truffaut one?
Not Hitchcock, who I also.
The Spielberg. Yeah. I've been out of town.
It's amazing. It's also amazing just to watch. I mean, look, I like my entire generation and the generation that's come after, we all grew up with Spielberg. And somehow watching it, I still feel like, I underappreciated his impact.
It's absurd. It's hard to overstate. Look, that's what's so exciting about Ready Player One yeah. is this kind of Steven Spielberg sampling Steven Spielberg. Right. It's like James Brown sampling James Brown if right. you came up in the classic period of, hip-hop, if you grew up in the... Yeah, it's
Are there directors that whether it's like you have the short list of people you want to work with, but beyond that, the directors that like you feel like you would vibe with, that like you feel like that, like their sensibility... seems like my sensibility, and I just want to know what it's like to be on that set to see like how they run a set.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. I mean, look, I don't want to do a shout out to them and then not get a job from them.
I'm trying to help you.
Yeah, well, and
they're just not aware. They want to hear the love, and then they'll reciprocate the love.
Well, okay. There's a couple of them. I mean, Tarantino, I think has. I mean, have you seen Death Proof?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, come on. That is just so balls out. I have never... I mean, and by the way, it's... And I'm looking at the poster of Big Trouble in Little China. Kurt has never been better. I mean, those scenes in the end when he's wounded and the delight in that performance is extraordinary. And then that stuff on the car, I mean, I've never seen anything like that. I have never seen anything like that. You know, you look at the fight scene in Ung Bak, right? And you go... Oh, my God, that is a fight scene, right? Everything else just kind of looks like, whatever.
Right, right.
You look at a car sequence, well, particularly you look at a human and a car, because Frankenheimer in is pretty damn fine, too.
Connection.
No, I'm thinking of Ronan. For the car sequence. Awesome.
Yeah.
Great movie. I think, I'd like to cook a dish with that guy.
You're just talking about the stunts. See, I mean,
go back, you look at Jackie Brown. I mean, I love Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
I
love that you're citing like the two that people don't usually ever talk about.
Oh, well, they're idiots. Yeah. They, you know, what do you want? You know, like most, they can't see. Look, you got to forget the Cocoa Pops and the Fruit Loops, you know?
Everyone, we all know Pulp Fiction's
and they're great. They taste great. I'm not talking about... No, what I'm saying is that, like, the thing... Like, it's easy to see why, you know, people hold them both up. Yeah. And they are great. But but anyway. You know, I guess it's horses for courses and whatnot too. And I'll try not to insult more of your audience as I go on.
No.
But for mine, no, Jackie Brown for a long time. But there's something about the delight. There's something about the delight, the freedom in Death Proof and the end. It's hard to see a film that ever can end better, like than boom, that moment. I mean, that's an end. Well, it's tough to end a film.
Yeah.
Tough to end a song. Tough to end a book. Let's tough to end an interview.
No, I should end it now, but I want more.
Damn it. It's over, man.
It's over. As he slowly backs out of the
release
room.
Release them. Yeah, release them.
Am I going to see you in a Marvel movie?
Wait, I hope
the mic
so.
Just went dead. What just
happened?
We were laughing. Everything was good.
Yeah, and then he turned.
I'll put it this way. If you were going to do a Marvel movie, I would think Fleck and Bowden would be people you might want to work with.
Yeah, I love that they're doing that Marvel movie.
Right.
That you seem to be referring to. That I would be I would be very, very happy to be doing that Marvel movie.
Yeah.
You know, Doctor Doom.
I was going to say, I've heard that you love Doctor Doom.
Oh, yeah. Doctor Doom's the greatest comic character of all time.
I can't say I've read that much Doctor Doom.
You don't need to read much. It's a small piece, right? Yeah. Like, the bit that deals with the beginning of Doom is pretty small.
Yeah.
It's just good.
So
it's just really, really good.
So I've heard you mention this before. Have you made... Because Noah Hawley of Fargo fame is developing a Doctor Doom movie.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of all this.
Do you tell Team Mendelsohn, let's set a meeting, let's talk?
That none of that gets done.
What?
None of that. Well, because I'm an old-fashioned actor. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. In that, you know, that phone ringing, you know, and I, like, you know...
You're not going to take out a marquee on Hollywood Boulevard and say...
I don't know. Maybe I'll switch up my style. I don't know. But whatever, you know, whatever it is, it's been working thus far.
Yes, clearly.
But no. Look, I'm sure they would have already got there. I'm sure they've already, I'm sure they've already closed in on some ideas with that.
I'm just curious.
That's a great role.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
What is the appeal
of just, like, forgetting, like, the practicalities of this ever could happen or not? Who knows? But, like, what's so appealing about that character?
About Victor?
Yeah.
Victor. The thing that's really appealing about Victor is the damage, the trauma, the loss of the family, right, and the wrong done to him. Then the takeover... Right, the revenge, the takeover, and then the protectiveness of Latvia, Latveria. Cold War shocker, wrapped in that Cold War vibe. And there's just something about the combination about that. What actually makes him great is his caring bit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's what's great about Dr. Doom, and I just like him. You know, I've never
Everybody's got their spirit animal, that's yours.
Yeah, I mean, the traditional surrounding that he has, doesn't particularly do it for me. You know what I mean?
Meaning the castle and the hills, that kind of thing?
No, you have to be more... no, the context in which he appears...
Right.
Right?
Right.
The, you know, that's not really... doesn't really do it for me. But he himself,
got it.
I love.
All right, we're going to make that happen. I'm going to make it happen because I'm curious about this project.
I'll if you make it happen, I'll give you commission.
Right,
That's it.
My new career. It's always good to see you, man. I'm such a, as you know, I'm a great admirer of your work.
Are we getting better at this?
I think so.
I think we've
established a rapport now.
Yeah, I feel like it.
We're taking this on the road.
Like, I feel like I'm shortening my career rapidly every time we speak.
Not at all. Darkest Hour is the film. It's a beautiful piece of work. And congratulations on it, man. Hopefully we'll talk a bunch through the silly award season.
You've got the first edition of Willow signed, the Marvel comic.
By both Val and Ron Howard.
Oh, man.
Val signed it peck, peck, peck.
I can't believe this. You've got a great nerd office. This is excellent.
You're welcome here anytime, man.
Thank you.
It's good to see you.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.